Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Story Break, live from Los Angeles, where the E3 highlights are just hitting the books. It's your host, Freddie Wong. This is a show where we have an hour to turn a humble idea into a pitch for an awesome movie.
Bing.
Yeah, what was that?
Bing.
Ooh. Yeah. What was that?
Bing, bing, bing.
Bam! Ba-da-dam! Bam! 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 Bum! 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 Bum!
Ba-da-bum! Bum! 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 Bum!
Bum! Bum! I'm Will Strife Gainsborough Tifa. I'm here with Avalanche to stop the Shinra Corporation from making bad movies.
Man, Final Fantasy VII, guys.
Story is the life force that pumps through our universe, and it feels like we're doing a Final Fantasy VII movie. We're not, but I'm Will Campos, and I'm a screenwriter.
We got Final Fantasy on the mind.
You guys got Final Fantasy on the mind. I got Zelda on the mind, and Final Fantasy. I got so guys. Do
my
we
mind
just watch
my
E3 stuff?
And my rupees on my mind.
There's a Rune Factory 4. Anyways, I'm Matt Arnold. I'm a writer director and 4 months ago, there was something that came into this world that I finally love more than Zelda, even though it is close. My beautiful baby girl, first thing I love more than Zelda.
What's
I guess
the
that
first,
my wife, too. I hope she doesn't listen to this. Anyways, yep, my name's Matt Arnold.
She doesn't listen to the podcast.
Yeah, my name's Matt Arnold.
Hey, Matt, what's the first Zelda game you're going to introduce to your beautiful baby girl?
First Zelda game. I mean, it depends on what's come out. I mean, Link's Awakening would be the game. That's my first Zelda game, so that's what I would like her to play. Mm-hmm. So, and now they got a remaster coming out. That's adorable, so super pumped for that.
Do you want your daughter to be more of a hardcore gamer than you or less of a hardcore gamer than you?
I want her to be whatever makes her happy, Freddie.
What if that
was... But it better be that she likes Zelda.
What if she's a Sega Genesis fan?
Oh, my God.
That'd be pretty hipster, I guess, because it would be like 40 years since the Sega Genesis came out.
Dot does what Matt don't.
All right.
This week... I'm going to QB this one, Freddie.
All right,
I'm going to
say yours, baby.
We love action movies here at Story Break Incorporated, LTD. And we've been talking about the action movie trope of the big guy. Because there's always like the big guy that the main guy fights, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like in John Wick, they started the movie with a big guy fight, like, you know, which was like, it was like kind of breaking the trend because usually the big guy fight happens towards the end. Or
it's
like
the second to last fight, usually.
Or it's like in the middle of like, it's like a middle of the movie fight where the audience's interest is kind of waning and then you throw a big guy in there. Like, Sherlock Holmes has a middle of the movie big guy fight, right? Where it's like him and Watson and he's like, me to potatoes. And then he's, you know, and you're like, how is
Indiana Jones?
Indiana Jones. The airplane Temple of Doom is the one that the conveyor belt. It's like you get that big guy, the guy that you, because you need that moment where the hero punches something and then he like goes like, oh shit, my fist hurts more than the thing I punched.
Yeah, and the guy doesn't react, and then the hero kicks him in the balls and you hear like metal clanging for some reason.
And that was Jaws for Bond.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty good joke because you're like, oh, he's got metal teeth, and he hits him in the nuts and there's metal there too. You're like, I get it, I guess. He's got metal everywhere. Good jokes, James Bond. Worth bringing that guy back for a second movie.
So we were like, what's a movie about the big guy? How does the big guy feel about always getting dunked on by the hero? You bring out the big guy because you think no one's going to be able to fight this big guy, and then he gets his ass kicked.
Yep.
So we were like, what about a movie about the big guy called Big Guy?
He also doesn't, I mean, I guess we should start the hour.
Yes,
that's the whole concept.
He also, sometimes he dies, but a lot of times he doesn't.
Yeah,
a lot of times he gets like thrown off of something and then it's like implied he dies. Cause like it's weird. It is a little bit like, you know, Shadows of the Colossus really understood that you're always sympathetic towards the big guy. Mm-hmm. A big dumb love. Cause at the end of that game, you're like, oh, the big guys they're all okay. So like I feel like movies are also kind of wary
of
killing.
Shadows
of the Colossus is about fighting 18 big guys.
Uh-huh. You know what? I will say, tip of the hat to Game of Thrones for giving us two big guys.
Ooh, and a two
and
big
then
big
having them and then building up the entire show to their fight. I want to see these two big guys fight.
Yeah, that was the finale, right? That was the end of the show. That's all. I turned it off after that. I was like, the two big guys fought. That's the end of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, because it was like, here's the big guy, and then here's his brother, the even bigger guy.
Game of Thrones did have some good big guys.
Yeah.
I got to say.
No, they were, in fact, of all the fantasy series, honestly, Game of Thrones really nailed the sort of, again, the big guy energy.
And sometimes, like with Conan the Barbarian, even Conan has a big guy, right?
Yeah, Conan has a big
guy. Or
is it
just Conan the big guy?
No,
Conan. Well, yeah, no, Conan will fight like a bigger guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that case, it's big guy and bigger guy.
Yeah.
But we're just dealing with big guy.
Big guy.
I love this idea. I love the idea of the pathos that, you know, this tool of a criminal organization has to go through. And in my head, how do you start it out, right? Like, what's a good inciting incident? What's a good way to kind of
kick things off? Well, as you said, Frank, you love the idea. So I get the pathos. What do you see when you think about the movie, when you get jazzed, when your metal balls make that clang, what is it that gets you excited about this
idea? When you're trying to speed things up in bed and you think about this movie.
What is it?
I like the idea.
I want to apologize for the last joke. I'm going to issue a formal statement apologizing for the gross joke where I imply that Freddy makes himself come faster by
rubbing my metal balls together and the sparks fly. That's what they mean when they say the sparks fly in the bedroom, right? It's because when your two metallic testicles make frictional contact and cause sparks to fly off like a piece of flint and potentially causing a minor conflagration in your bedroom. Okay. Things that I like. I like the idea of like a couple of things. I love things that explore things that we all just sort of take for granted, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea of like the criminal organization and like the questions that you have. One, how many big guys are out there? Two, how does a big guy show up in the crime organization? Is he there from the beginning? Do they hire? Are they looking for a guy like that? Is it a goal of like the main like bad guy to be like, you know what we need is we need some real muscle in here and they have to audition them? Like, how does that work? And a lot of times, again, they don't necessarily, you know, in some of these movies, right, they don't necessarily die. And the big evil isn't necessarily totally destroyed, right? So then it's like, happens to this guy? What happens to this guy? He failed at his task. Or maybe he does become successful. One of the other things is I love trope breaking thing. So the idea of like also, let's say he does do the penultimate hero fight and he wins.
Like he kills
Indiana
Jones.
He kills clearly who is supposed to be the hero of another movie. And okay. Now it's him.
That's a good start to the movie, by the way, is you come in and you're following what's clearly like your hero, like at like a gambling game. Mm-hmm. And it's all from his POV and it's all like clearly James Bond. And he's like looking and he like flips over the cards like, oh shit, you win. And then somebody hands him like a metal coin and like, bring us in the back. And he's like going and he's like, oh shit, like this guy's going to steal this place. He's like glancing off. And then the big guy comes like, oh shit, here comes the big guy fight. And the big guy just snaps his neck and fucking wins. And then he just title slammed the big guy. And it's like, hey, boss, I did it.
I was going to say, the other thing you could do is like, that's your opening is the end of this James Bond movie where then the big lava moon base blows up. And then it's like, you just cut to the big guy. It's like, oh, shit, I got to get a new job.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just out of work now. I think the stuff you're talking about was really interesting. What I've never seen? We've now seen the two big guy fight. Mm-hmm. What I've never seen is like, they're holding auditions for the big guy. And so then there's like 20 big guys. Yeah. And they have like a big guy battle royale to get the job. Like, it's like one of those like, WrestleMania, Hell in a Cell matches where there's like 20 people on the stage.
So, okay, thinking about some of the tropes of the big guy. One, they're usually dumb.
Yeah.
Which, you know, maybe has its own problems. That's part of it. Because it
definitely has its own problems.
Yeah. Because the other thing they're commonly used for, like, even looking back at like Mongo from Blazing Saddles, they're often used to kind of show the, like, on a very personal, like, because, like, yes, bad guy's evil, they're going to conquer the world or whatever, but, like, the big guy's often, like, a way to kind of show, like, there's something about disrespecting your employees as, like, extra shitty, especially, like, in American culture. Like, that guy's a bad boss. He really deserves to go to prison. So, like, the big guy's often used as, like, see, like, this guy's abusive to even the people that work under him, because they're often, like, seen as, like, the guy who has no respect and is just kicked around. It's like, hey, go fight that thing.
It's also, like, a way to
humanizing.
It's a way to show that your villain is, like, you know, not afraid of anybody, that he's going to mouth off to this.
Yeah.
You know, like, that Carl in Die Hard takes orders from Hans Gruber, man he could break in two like a toothpick, like, shows you something about Hans Gruber. Hans Gruber's, like, one of those bad guys that seems like a good boss, like, you know what I mean? Like, everyone kind of respects his leadership, and, like, you know, but, like, it also gives that, it can, the villain's relationship to the big guy is, like, a core, you know, thing, you know? Like,
yeah,
you,
100%.
That defines both the villain and the big guy.
You know, it's really making me think, because I don't know if we've really talked about our discussion about big guys, but this is all making me think of, realize why I don't like big guy fights at all, usually, most of the time. Mm-hmm. The ones I do are like Indiana Jones, when it's like the big guy doesn't really feel like, he's just a dude.
That guy seems really happy to be a Nazi.
Yeah, exactly.
His handlebar mustache, he's like, ha-ha, it's me, the shitty Nazi.
Yeah.
So you're like, all right, kick his ass.
Because for me, action movies are all about the illusion. They have to make you feel okay with the violence that's going on.
Yes,
like, and your hero has to be okay, you have to be rooting for it. Like, to me, the best big guy fight is the one that essentially calls attention to this, is the big guy fight in Princess Bride. Because it's like that sort of dynamic is put there on the surface. Like, yeah, this guy disrespects me, he's an asshole, but like, you know, we got to do this. And he has the Rock and they have this whole funny conversation as they're fighting. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, yeah, I can never quite root for the hero killing the big guy, because I just always feel,
because the big guy feels like in the depictions of these, he feels like a misused tool of this organization. It doesn't, like, right, Indiana Jones, it feels like that guy that, you know, the mechanic loves being a Nazi, but most of the time the big guy guys, who feels like, it feels like he's just trying to do his job. And it's like he's definitely being thrown in there against the guy. And it's like, yeah, he might.
I will say, as this brings up a side point, which is that as I've gotten older, I feel more and more sympathy for stormtroopers and Star Wars movies. Like, yeah. If you watch, like, Empire's, if you watch the original, if you watch A New Hope, like, Obi-Wan's creeping around the side of that thing, and then these two guys are just shooting this shit on the bridge. They're like, hey, you see the new thing? And it looks pretty cool. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to check it. Hey, what was that noise? And they're like, it's probably nothing. You're like, these are just guys.
Yeah, yep. It's very humanizing.
The Empire's probably got a better health plan than the fucking Rebel Alliance. So the Rebel Alliance are like, we want you to go blow up the Death Star, and we're going to pay you an exposure. Fucking, here's your little participation trophy you get at the end in the little ceremony.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
That's great. Do you have a 401k? No? All right. I'm going to go work on the Death Star. Death Star dose.
Well, it's true, because the moment they become human, I think the big guy is often the villain that becomes the most humanized. And this gets into kind of maybe some weird toxic lizard brain masculinity or whatever. But like, I think there's also an element of his, like, the big guy's always, weirdly for being the big guy, he's always like the most emasculated to a degree. There's something about seeing, like, my lizard
true.
Brain. When I see a big buff guy get bossed around by a little guy, I'm like, that guy, I feel nothing about it. I'm like, that guy sucks. I'm kind of like, that guy's not a man.
I will.
And then you have your biggest guy feel the least quote unquote manly. So like, then when that fight happens, you're just like, oh, I feel bad for this guy.
No, but yeah. I think you're right. I think, and I'm not joking around when I say, yeah, I think that's often the reason the big guy gets kicked in the balls.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, it is like, interesting.
Like, I honestly really do believe that, because I think it is like there is nothing more primal a threat to your masculinity than a bigger version of you.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So then you're saying, like, but this guy can't feel anything in his balls. And like, you know, like, kick the shit out of him, he's dumb and stupid.
Or alternately, like, sometimes that is their one weak point, right? It's kind of both sides of the same coin, which is like targeting the masculine question in this thing, which is hero versus their antithesis.
Maybe
in
big guys are just insecurity manifested of insecure, unattractive, schlubby writers who write the biggest, most masculine guy is always ugly, dumb, and gets kicked in the balls. Like, no, that guy is taking your girlfriend.
It's every
and you lose your fight.
It's
That's
every
how it works.
Screenwriter's bully from high school,
yes,
sort
yes.
of stretched out and grotesquified. Yeah,
yes.
Like the this is to me the challenge of the thing. It's like, how meta is this movie?
Yes,
like, are we doing a movie that in and of itself seems to, like, the world is like the world of action movies, almost like Wreck-It Ralph is the world of
video
games.
I would say this.
Are you doing like a straight ahead movie that, like, on our meta level is like us trying to reclaim and tell a story about a big guy?
So in my head, at the very least, and this may be the wrong direction, but in my head, I think you have, for example, whatever this movie is, you would have the scene where the little ratty boss dresses him down and tells him to do something. But in the movie you would be watching, right, that would be the end of that scene. But this scene would continue, and it would be another guy from the criminal's organization be like, dude, that was harsh. He's like, yeah, I know, but like, it's important not to challenge the CEO structure in front of him. I'll file a complaint with HR, but like, yeah, you know, it kind of sucks, but I'm used to it. You know,
well, I think to Will's point is, the thing that's always struggling with the idea of the movie, it's also like, it's a very specific meta thing, but it's like, is it in a world where there's like lots of criminal organizations and constantly need it? And like, what's the guy?
I think it is. I actually think
it has to be like, even because John Wick is kind of also meta. John Wick is essentially a world where killers and movie mafia are all like part of the universe.
Yeah.
I mean, even to the point where the regular people of New York don't even seem to matter in the last John Wick movie.
Yeah. So what I could see is, again, like, and I think the way you guide the audience into that is like, we start with the Bond movie, right? And then we go into the big guy fight. Like, I think that way people get it. They're like, I got it. I'm watching an action movie. Oh, here's the really big guy. Like, I've seen this fight a zillion times, right? And then it's just about who you follow after that fight is different, right?
What happens at the end of that fight will be kind of where our hero is status quo wise.
Yes.
So what is his journey and what is he trying to do? Like, what is a thing? Is it a guy realizing he doesn't have to? It's okay to be the big guy? Is it a guy realizing he's got to take control of his own life?
It is weird because you're like, he works for an evil organization, right?
Yeah. So you have to. But in the stormtrooper sense, I think it's because they got a good 401k.
Yeah, but there were plenty of Nazis that worked for the Nazis that had a good 401k.
It's also like not a normal stormtrooper. Like, I can sympathize with stormtroopers because you're like, oh, they are people in a society that are doing a job. The big guy is like, he knows what's going on. He's the right-hand man. He might not have the strength. And the fact that I judge him more to a degree because he doesn't have the strength to stand up and say something. Like, he knows.
Well, I think that's what the movie has to get to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I feel like there might be a self-pitying aspect to this character.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But, okay. So, to jump in on it, to take an angle on it, let's say you have this opening, and let's say he works for a Bond villain, right? Like, Blofeld.
Yeah.
And, you know, the opening is the base, and it gets blown up. And, like, again, like, you have the big guy fight, right? And then, like, James Bond says the little quip and, like, you know, ties the metal chain around his neck and kicks him off the side of the thing. And then James Bond goes off, right? And, like, he says his quip and he runs off. And then, like, the self-destruct countdown on the lava base starts. But we don't follow James Bond. We hang on the big guy, like, dangling over a precipice as the life is getting choked out of him. And he's struggling to get out, right? We follow him as he barely escapes this big explosion or whatever, right? And now you're like, okay, this is the main character of the movie.
Literally, he turns back and the island base is exploding, and then, like, you literally see, like, he, like, kind of squints, and in the distance there's, like, a yacht, like, blowing away, and it's clearly two silhouetted people doing it on the yacht. He's like, oh man. Like, Blofeld, clearly Bond is
Blofeld's, like, getting arrested, and he's like, hey boss, can you write me a recommendation or whatever? He's like, what are you talking about? You got kicked in the nuts and lost everything. Bullshit, you're never gonna work for a criminal organization ever again. And then it's like, because also the big guys often have that, they always have that line when the big guy guy's about to kind of, like, talk back or whatever. The bad guy's always like, you want to go back to the gutter where I found you? Or it's like, when I found you, you were in Siberia at a wrestling match with nothing but a vodka in one hand and $2 in the other. It's always like some sort of, like,
backstory
where the only, so I feel like it's something that brings him back to that moment in his life.
Okay, hear me out. What if you do this story? Because you just, like, now you've opened this world up to, like, this semi-abusive codependent relationship between Blofeld and his henchmen. So I'm like, do you do that? He rescues Blofeld, right? And, like, he's carrying Blofeld out, and it's just like, they now, like, they're both starting over from nothing, right? And Blofeld's like wants to, like, get back into the game or whatever, and he's like, I need you, you're my big guy. That's, like, kind of like a manipulative relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you do, it's like,
I feel like he has to go to different people to really make it about what it means to be, like, a big guy in an organization, as opposed to
hear me out. You do, it's Sunset Boulevard. Okay. And hear me out. So the beginning is he fails, and now he can't get any work as a big guy, right?
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, all the spy organizations are still hunting him down or whatever.
Yeah.
So he goes and holes up in an old Bond villain mansion, right? Like an old hideout, right? And who's
a lava cave
or whatever. And who's lurking down there? It's this aging Norma Desmond-esque supervillain who's been looking for a way to get back on top. Do you know what I mean?
Holy shit.
He's like, I always need a big guy. Well, you do. Maybe he tries to go straight. It's like, who else looks for big guys? It's like, well, you know, Secret Service is looking for big guys. People are looking for big guys. But he's got this criminal past and nobody will hire him. The wrestling league is like, you don't have enough personality. Like, you can't be a wrestler. He's trying to go straight, but he can't find any jobs. It's like, so sure enough, he finds himself in, like, a similar situation where he started as, like, some sort of, you know, drunk fighting, like, underground wrestling matches. And then, yes, he finds this lady or whatever, this old supervillain a la Sunset Boulevard. Like, he's got it's like the first kind of glimmer of hope he has. Mm-hmm. And then you feel bad. It's kind of like the world is his enemy. It's like he's trying.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, this poor guy, like, what's, you know, now I get it. It's like, what else can this big guy do? Like, he's been trying to go straight, but, like, the world doesn't want him. Because
civilized society has very few places for guys who can hit things really good.
So that's interesting. I was also like, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say, or can we just do it? It's essentially just a dark, it's just a criminal version of Forrest Gump. You do. You're just going through the different moments of all these action movies. He's just like, but instead of like,
so, but it's him and James Bond on the bench before their big guys fight.
Yes.
Oh, you know what's fun about that, by the way, is that if you ever
like, I just want to be friends with you, Bond. Remember when we were both in Vietnam? You do like, and then you cut to Vietnam, but it's like a Moonraker version of Vietnam. And he's the big guy, and he was there when they faked them, when he fought them on the moon and stuff like that. And he's just,
you know what's fun, by the way, just as a small fun detail, is that like if it's like a 007 like character, when he meets him again later in the movie, it's clearly a different actor. It's just, but it's still, it's like, it's me. 007. Like, what happened to the other guy? It's like, not only have we done a different movie, we've done a different actor change in the 007 like universe.
So you're talking about more like the story of a man's life is what you're talking about.
You're just talking about different things. Like, oh yeah, you could totally do the big guy. He's just in, but instead of historical events, it's all his movie.
The only other twist.
Time.
Here's the only other twist. I like the Sunset Boulevard angle. It's pretty funny. The only other twist. Here's the thought, which is, it's, why is it always bad guy organizations that hire big guys?
Well, that's what I was just saying. They're not.
I know, but like, why wouldn't MI6 be like, Bond, we're pairing you up with the big guy for this one. We need you to be escorted by this big guy. You know what I mean? Like,
it is weird to think that I literally can't even kind of understand what that would look like.
Here's something you could do. You could do, this is again, kind of, again, this is a word a bit Wreck-It Ralph territory.
Yeah, I would say.
Like, Wreck-It Ralph territory is like, he's the big, you know, bad guy at the end of the thing. You could do, like, he gets a job going undercover for, like, the good guys or something. But that just feels like it's a straight-ahead action movie.
And you're not really playing into the conceit of, like, it being a big guy in action movies, I guess.
Okay.
Forrest
if you were
Lump.
Gonna,
he's just a big lump.
Forrest Lump.
So if you were going to do the Forrest Gump thing, you would do, like, again, like, it's kind of like our cat movie. It feels like five acts. Each of the acts would be, like, a different flashback that's, like, a different movie spoof.
I'm essentially thinking of, like, the beginning of the first X-Men with Wolverine. It's, like, you do, like, it's this little kid, and he's so big that he can't fit into his, like, his uniform, and he lives in, like, a poor town. And they're like, you're good for it. It's like, Forrest Lump, you're good for nothing but punching stuff. And, like, all the kids make fun of him. And instead of him running, not knowing where he's going on the football field, he, like, punches somebody so hard that he, like, kills a kid. So, like, they... You know, he can't go to school anymore. He's in juvie.
He starts, his first movie is like a Sandlot kids movie where he's
the bully.
There's the bully, and then there's the bully's big lunky friend.
Yeah.
So you would do that.
The only person who's his friend is the bully who makes fun of the football player. He's like, hey, buddy, like, I could use somebody like you. And then it's like his first friend in school is a bully who needs a big lunkhead.
Oh, that's really fun. Yeah.
And then you do where he meets, instead of meeting Elvis Presley, he meets, like, I don't know, Mike Tyson or somebody who teaches him how to box. And like, whatever happened to that guy? He seemed like a nice gentleman.
Oh, Mike Tyson. Oh, gee whiz.
He was in Hangover. It was great.
The whole movie is this Shaggy Dog story of him, like, talking about, like, how he wound up here and how he wound up there. And then the end is just James Bond telling him off, being like, dude, those are bad people. Yeah. It doesn't matter that you wanted to be loved. Like, you still have a moral responsibility to be a good person. Fuck your story. I don't give a shit.
And he just kicks him in the nuts. And he falls over and he goes, I'm not a man. And then it goes, written by three guys who were bullied in high school.
I want to be clear, I was not bullied.
Neither
in high school.
Was I.
I did okay too.
You know what? Did you guys have bullies in high school?
No, there was
really
none.
I had a bully in elementary school, and then I was bullied a little bit in like sixth grade, seventh grade.
I guess
that's why I'm smarter than you, Chad.
No, I guess that's why it's privileged. I'm sure there were bullying.
Are you like, is there bullying anymore? Isn't that like from the 50s?
No, I meant maybe that's the thing about going to an all boys school. Like, there was bullying, but like there was not really like. Anyways, it was different.
That's like, I remember all the kids I picked on used to talk about.
All these kids talked about bullying all the time. I mean, I couldn't hear them over.
Yes, the anime watching Smash Brothers bullying guy was the bully at a football all boys high school. I bullied all those jocks.
Yes, Matt, certainly someone who likes anime and video games could never be mean or abusive.
Wait, is that true? Let me check online. Let me go to Twitter. Oh my God. Guys, I was a bully.
Okay. All right. How are we doing on time, Freddie?
About halfway through this one.
Okay.
26 in.
That seems fast, man. This is going, you know, if nothing else, talking about big guys is fun. Time flies.
time flies when you're chatting about big guys with your bros.
Okay. All right. We need to fucking commit to something. Let's do the Forrest Gump thing.
Okay. I like the Forrest Gump.
I mean, it's definitely a
because
structure.
It tells you the story too of like why does he keep finding himself in these like the circle, this relationship, okay. Right?
All
right,
and it lets you kind of play with the different versions of big guys. Like I didn't even think about it in terms of Lunkhead with the bully in high school.
Yeah.
And then he gets caught up in like some stupid scheme, you know, some like small scale. Like again, then it was in like a Coen Brothers movie. Some like in over their head criminals always has like the big guy who's the only.
Here's
person
what I would say. It's a classic crime story. It's like a Godfather or something. Not Godfather, it's like Goodfellas.
Yeah,
essentially with this Forrest Gump kind of twist. So like act one would be he's a kid. He winds up being the friend of the bully, right? Mm-hmm. The end of that act would be he and the bully get into some trouble and the bully's a rich, privileged kid. So he winds up taking the fall for it and going to prison. Yeah. Second movie's a prison movie. Lots of big guys in prison movies.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And then so prison movie is where he gets into his life of crime.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Because who does he meet in prison? The next bully. He meets Blofeld, who's doing a rap for whatever. Like he's doing a, you know, he's like, you know, Bond just threw him in here or whatever.
It's like, yes. And then like they break Blofeld out of prison and who's with him in the cell is a big guy. He's
and
like,
he goes,
hey, buddy, you coming?
Yeah.
Like, and he's a big guy.
And again, I like that as a turning moment where it's like he could stay in the cell and do his time and, you know, try to go straight. Yeah. But again, like the guards look down on him.
They've used him in prison fighting. Because,
The plight of the big guys. Everyone's like, oh, you got to kick the biggest guy's ass the first day. So everyone's always coming for him. You know what I mean? And the guards are always beating him. So like the only person who's ever been kind to him again is this guy who's busting him out of jail.
Yeah.
Right. So then that starts the third act is this life of crime, you know, where he gets into like, you know, being this bruiser for, you know, these criminal organizations, essentially. And then some deeper goal would manifest itself there, like something he really wants, because now he has essentially a certain kind of love. Right. Yes. Like in that he's useful. He is useful to somebody, but he doesn't feel respect. There would be like, does he want to run his own thing? Does he want like, is there some want that we plant back when he was a little kid? That is the thing he wants. Like, you know, that has nothing to do with crime. Like that would be the thing he's chasing.
Yeah. I think the thing to figure out is kind of working towards what is the conceit of the movie and what's the message at the end? Or like what's going to be the ending?
Yeah, because
that's the kind of way you work towards. Exactly. What do you want to do with it? Is it like a dark tragic thing where it's like this guy dies and like, yes, it's like he did bad things and like you may sympathize and understand it, but is that or does he overcome it? Or like, again, when and what is it even overcoming? Like learning
part
to love
of it
himself?
Part of it is also how does he feel about his plight, right? Is it some, right? Like it could be he's in love with the criminal organization. He wants to run his own is one direction. The other direction is like he has a goal that has nothing to do with being a criminal, right? So he just wants to paint or something like that, right? Like, and
to me, it is anyone who commits a crime everyone has a story. Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone has a motivation and is like, you know, in my view of the universe, is a person capable of redemption, is someone who has a complete psyche, who is, you know, like, I think it's again, the big guy is this ugly stereotype, right? Like, it is like you reduce someone to a hulking monster, right?
Yeah, right.
And so, to me, what's interesting is getting a more complete picture of somebody that doesn't necessarily, you know, so just because you have empathy for someone doesn't mean you condone the things that they did or the choices that they made, but like you understand them, and just because someone came from a certain circumstance doesn't mean they are not responsible for their actions or like the choices that they make, that you can always choose to be a better person.
Right.
Right. So to me, like what would be interesting is like, is there a redemptive moment for this character?
Right. Does it build up to your big final thing? And it's the choice of, okay, I'm going to be a better person. Right.
He joins a CrossFit gym. Cause like, hey, we need a big guy to teach people CrossFit. You could use your good to be fitness oriented and, you know, positively macho or whatnot, but I don't know how positive.
Well, it does feel like there's a climb. One of the climaxes is, I mean, if we're starting with a big guy fight and then we're flashing back or what, I'm not again, not quite totally sure on how that structure works, but it does feel like you get to that point at least once in this movie, right? Where it's like, it's a showdown that's clearly he's on the wrong side of good or the morality of it.
By the way, really quickly, since you're doing the meta thing on, sorry, Freddy, that was a good point, but this is a stupid joke idea. Since you're doing like the Forrest Gump thing, you can kind of do anything. There should be one thing where it's like he tries to get out of the life of crime. So he's like, yeah. So like then, you know, like Commando and like all these big movies came out. So I was like, well, I'm a big guy. I'll go be a big guy in a movie. And then he does it. And he's like, but then all of a sudden, then like in the 90s, it was all like disaster films and big guys weren't needed anymore. And, you know, honestly, Hollywood was just as tough as crime. They see him get into cocaine and like he gets caught up in like the Hollywood thing. And then he gets
him turning into a movie star at one point.
Yeah, like in the 80s.
That's act four. That's the midpoint. That's like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like maybe that is a turn, is that he becomes an action hero.
Yeah, and then even there, it's like, and again, he gets, even in that world, he's just used for the specific image and he's reduced to this moment. And like, he got money and it was exciting and it wasn't criminal, but again, that was also temporary.
Like a little bit like, are you saying if he's a hero or is he, like, because like, right,
I think he's a big guy in the movie.
Oh, no, I was going to say, you do like, he would again, because like, Arnold Arnold Schwarzenegger was a big dude, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it'd be like if he was in the Terminator or something like that.
Because, you know, especially in like Hong Kong action movies or some of those 80s, like you would have like the recurring big guy.
Yeah.
Like the big white guy that's like fights Jackie Chan and fights Jet Li. He's kind of like the famous like dude. Again, somebody like if there wasn't like the DVD market today, is like Roy Atkins or whatever his name is.
I think, all right, here's right to tackle this from another angle. I love that.
Scott Atkins.
I like him being him going into Hollywood is hysterical and like allows you to make the subtext text in a really fun way.
Yeah.
What I was gonna say is, if this is Forrest Gump, like who is his Jenny or what is the thing that he's always wanted? Do you know what I mean?
Like, could it just be like he just wants to make sure that his mom's got a good life? He's taking care of his mom.
So what is the end of Forrest Gump? I know she dies.
She dies because she was a free thinker who didn't do what she was told.
Yeah. No, Forrest Gump,
who, you know, is a dumb, loyal patriot.
Forrest Gump is an interesting...
It's an interesting text.
It's an interesting text. You can approach it in many different ways, and there are definitely some incredibly vulgar, like, this is the worst movie ever sort of readings of it, for sure.
It's about him finding his son is what it is. Forrest Gump is about him realizing that he has a son.
I totally forgot he has a son in the movie.
I've read the book.
Okay, well, the book ends differently, right? Anyways, who cares how it ends? But
So it's the point is he realizes that, you know, it's him, and then it's him finding his son, and, you know, it's like, is he going to be smart? Or, is he, you know, like, then the feather goes, and the feather turns into a gunblade.
You're talking about the greatest moment of all time in cinema, which is the intro of Final Fantasy VIII, where we're with the girl standing in a field and she blows like a rose petal or a feather or something. I think it's a flower petal.
It's a flower petal.
And this flower petal sails up into the sky. And as in 2001 A Space Odyssey, a petal goes up and what comes down? A fucking gunblade. Yes. The coolest weapon of all time.
Spinning as if it was the petal. Like, yes. Again, it's a perfect match cut. So yes, what is this building to? What is his...
Can I throw something at you?
Yeah.
Is he actually smart? Does he, like, is he dumb?
I don't think so.
Or is he dumb? Like, is Forrest Gump actually dumb? Or are we all the dumb ones? And is the simple wisdom of a man who looks things in a different way that's the true wisdom?
Has he always wanted to, like, again, like, it's, you start with him in school, right? Like, is this someone who has actually wanted to learn and wanted to, you know, educate himself?
I don't think he needs to be smart because it's like, the subversion I'd be like, oh, but he's not actually bad and dumb. He's smart. It's like, that's just like being tall or short. It's just a factor.
Sure.
Like, I think he is, again, it's like
tied to his goal.
Yeah. What does he want?
What
is he seeking, and what does he get or not get in the end?
Okay. So yes, that's the thing you got to tie in. That's the thing you got
to. Yeah. Like, is he going to find use?
Here's what I would say. I think this is a man who wants to be loved.
Yes.
Right. What is interesting about, again, another thing that Game of Thrones explores, I think really interestingly, that love is not necessarily a moral force, right?
Yes.
That like there's a sort of bigger, like, we all love each other and we should all respect each other, you know, golden rule stuff. But there's also love as like a need for acceptance and a need for love that is like, again, like when Jaime Lannister runs off to be with his sister at the end, like that's like the dark side of love. Do you know what I mean? Like that's someone, you know, and going after the woman he loves, but the woman he loves is evil.
Yes.
So this guy's need to be loved, this guy's desire to be loved leads him down a dark path.
Yeah, he is the guy who's never been accepted, and the places he finds his acceptance are in bad, you know, with bad people. But it's all you also feel bad because you know that that's not the love he's actually needs or looking for.
It feels like then there needs to be someone, I'm not saying romantic, maybe it's romantic, he needs to fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like there would be something that would compel, again, like, I like that the reason that he runs out of the prison in the end of the second act, you know, is because the person who he thinks cares about him, right? And the person he thinks cares about him is actually manipulating him, right? So it's like, does he meet someone in act three who actually offers, like, who loves him for who he is?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like, maybe you do a dark turn where, like, the evil, that person is the enemy of the evil organization that he's a part of. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I mean,
it could be like the Bond figure, like the hero of the other movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know,
like the, like,
he,
you
falls,
know,
in love with Bond.
Like Bond fights him, right?
Yeah.
And then like Bond's the first person to beat his ass. But then like you do, it's like a compassionate Bond who, like, you know, gives him a cigarette and is like, cheer up, old sport, or whatever.
Yeah, lifts up his shirt and is like, you want to touch my boob?
Wait, what?
Sorry, what?
Scene in Forrest Gump where Jenny's like, touch my boob. What? You guys watched that movie when you're 13, and that's not the only thing you remember.
I have a confession to make. I've never seen Forrest.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I've seen a little bit of it on TV.
Well, clearly not that part.
Yeah, not the boob part. I remember that.
I was like, interesting. So when a girl likes you, they'll lift up their shirt and be like, here, and take your hand and be like, touch my boob. I was like, interesting. Okay, taking notes.
Taking notes. All right.
Okay, I got that down. I got talking about Gilbert Grape. I'm good to go to school today, people.
Okay. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's a story about abusive relationships and how to get out of that, right? Or how someone gets out of that.
Well, it's also like, I would say that there's an element of like, it would be like he finds someone who loves him for who he is, but he can't be with them because he doesn't love himself.
Here's what's great, actually. If you take the toxic and probably an accurate reading of Forrest Gump, it actually works in this way to not be toxic because, yes, the whole point of Forrest Gump is listening to conservatives who like it, is that he's dumb, but he's too smart to fall for all the lethal values of the 1960s.
That's true.
For somebody that inherently is dumb, it's actually, no, he's the smart one because he sticks to the true conservative values of the time. Mm-hmm. And the free-loving, hippie girlfriend who he thinks he loves, yeah, she dies from AIDS and he gets a good son to raise the right way. But if you were to take Jenny and make her a bad guy, mm-hmm. in the 60s, instead of talking about 60s love and liberalism, it is crime organizations, mm-hmm. then that story works correctly. Mm-hmm. She would be like the first bully who...
So Jenny is Blofeld.
Well, not necessarily Blofeld. Jenny is like, because Jenny's
no,
not...
No, Mr. Bond, I want you to touch my Jenny, boob. There, Blofeld, you're mad.
There is the... Jenny is the original love of his life, right? And she kind of flows in and out of the story. Like, he doesn't see her sometime for years, 10 years at a time.
Yeah.
So I think the first bully that he teams up with in school, and that character has their own... you know, version of constantly trying to be a criminal mastermind on and off throughout time, and unlike and you know, dies of the criminal version of AIDS or whatever at the end. But yeah, it's
which
like
would
they,
be getting shot by James Bond into a giant like rocket.
Somebody who,
into the sun. Yeah. That's the criminal.
Yeah. Somebody who embraces the ideology of these criminals.
Yes.
Whereas our poor Forrest Gump character is just doing it because, again, somebody who's looking for love in their life, mm-hmm. but, you know, has a good heart and is deep down wiser than them all and is always trying to do the right thing deep down and then ultimately escapes the liberalism of the 1960s. Man, Forrest Gump's a fucked up movie. But yeah, then that actually kind of works and it's not as gross of a version. You're like, yeah, this guy's going to escape it. And his bully, his one friend, his true friend from childhood, mm-hmm. his first real friend. Because again, they kind of show that Jenny's parents were abusive and terrible. Because mm-hmm. Again, they didn't vote for Reagan or whatever. So you do that. It's like, again, like the bully and the kid was actually like the only bad guy that really liked him.
They were true
friends at first. They were actually friends. It was a kind of a toxic relationship, and they were both dealing with stuff, and the guy was a bully because he had a tough childhood, too. Mm-hmm. But they were actually friends, and they're both journeying through this...
Crime hellscape
of movie land, or whatever.
So does he meet up with his friend in jail?
Yeah. Oh, so...
In Act Two?
So I don't remember exactly, but, like, Jenny shows up, probably on, if you look back, probably on the act places.
She shows up
at different times. Like, after he goes to Vietnam, he comes back, and, of course, she's involved in the Vietnam protests.
Okay, so here's what I like. Okay, so yes, you do Act One, is that he's the big kid who essentially gets picked on. And then, yes, you do, he makes this friend who happens to be the bully, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like they're, you know, off raising hell together, right? And that is like, that is the acceptance, right?
Yeah.
And so then you would do that, yes, the end of the first act is him getting thrown in the joint, right?
Yes.
And now he's in prison. He's dealing with life in prison, being the big guy in prison.
Yeah.
And then... once again, who comes to prison 10 years later is his friend, who was, you know, running a, you know, some sort of criminal mm-hmm. scam or something like that. But his friend, who's the free thinker, right, who's the Bond villain, mm-hmm. has the plan to bust out of here,
mm-hmm.
right? So then it would be he and his friend bust out. He's like, great, we can be together. But while they're on the lam, they get separated from each other,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it would be like they bust out together, but then they're, you know, getting chased by the cops and they have to separate.
Yeah.
I think it's like Act Two of the love story. It's like, oh, no, they got pulled apart from each other,
yes.
right? But now he's got to make it on his own as a criminal goon.
Yeah.
And so now he is going into this life of crime. Yeah. Or he's just trying to make it in the world, right? He's just trying to make his way in the world. And it could be like that. Maybe that's where he does Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right? Like he tries to, again, he's not evil by impulse, right?
No.
So it'd be like he goes and he's a stuntman. He's a Hollywood stuntman, you know, in these, you know, these action movies. He tries to do professional wrestling. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then again, who comes along with the answer? It's the Bond villain.
Yeah.
Right. And so then it would be essentially like the, like, he is the bad guy is a full blown Bond villain now. And then he goes to be part of his organization.
Yes.
And like that would be the, and then essentially that's the find, right? It's like that would be your midpoint, would be the, like, he, that's when he becomes the goon.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the heavy in the organization, and like all of the underlings respect him for the first time.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And he's like the number two guy, right? Like that would be essentially his height. And then you would do, he has to see the dark side of his friend in Act Four.
Yes. So you do, I'm trying to think. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, like, if you're following the force gun structure, it's like you'd also, like, again, I could even see where, like, the reason he goes to prison, because the other thing is, like, Jenny's very, like, condescending to him, kind of. You know, you're just too sweet, Gump. Like, you can't do this. So you could also see the thing where it's like, I would imagine that actually in prison, he might meet, like, his first, like, villain that he works for. And, like, the way I could see him meeting his bully, Jenny, is, like, that villain is fighting another villain and finds, like, Jenny is the other villain. And when they're going to prison, it's like, it's like, Jenny, take me with you. Like, I could be your big guy. He's like, oh, you're just too sweet for this life of crime. And then, like, again, it's like she leaves him. Like, she keeps leaving. Like, Jenny keeps leaving Gump throughout his life because she's like, oh, you're just like, you're just, oh, you're so sweet. You can't do drugs and stuff in my hippie, like, lifestyle. Like, I'm going to leave you again. And Gump's like, oh, man. The point being is, like, I think you want to see him engage in different, like, I don't think it's always like him and Jenny going through life together.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah,
again,
yeah,
to
yeah,
me,
yeah.
Act Two, again, I like them getting separated just by the law.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
again,
yeah.
Like, they're fugitives and they have to, you know, like, you run this way, I run this way, we'll split them up.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I guess this is goodbye. Like, I'll see you around. You know, it's like, it's a friend.
Yeah.
So yes, then I like that, but I like that the midpoint of the movie, essentially, like the midpoint is him becoming the Bond villain.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Him becoming the goon, like the number two, right? Like, this is what his whole life is built up to, you know?
Like when Forrest Gump becomes an American hero. But for what sort of America?
I like the idea, by the way, it's like during this, it's like, because you sometimes see this as a plot point in like spy movies, is like, you feel like, oh, there's a big Bond fight, and it's like, he kills a guy, but then that's the plot point for another movie where it's like, 006 was killed by this man. Now you, and it's like, he has to go through a bunch of, like, clearly a bunch of people sent from the same British spy organization. He's like, oh no, they just keep coming in. I gotta swat them down like flies.
Well, you could also do, it could be, again, like the classic thing would also be like in the middle of the movie, like Bond loses the first fight to the big guy. And the big guy throws him off the cliff and they think Bond is dead. Right. And that's the greatest moment of his life.
That's
right.
True.
He's like,
party.
I am
there's
a hero.
Party.
Everyone loves me. You know, and there's nothing that can stop our evil plan. But he's like, wait a second. There's nothing that can stop our evil plan. Like what? You want to do what? You want to poison the world's water to turn people into frogs?
I love the montage idea. It's like you know, he was a tough guy. He was a tough boss. But you know what? There's a lot of good things about it. I got to travel. And then you see like him on the moon. And you see him like a jungle. You know, you see him this. Went to a lot of, you know, had a lot of good food. It's just like this. This guy just got going on all these adventures with this bad guy, not really realizing like what he was doing, sort of. But then, yes, he's faced with it when it's successful.
So here's what I would say. Oh, again, by the way, another classic big guy thing, like my favorite. And he's not a big guy, but it's a similar role. Mad Dog and Hard Boiled.
Oh, yeah.
Is one of the classic henchmen, right? Like this surly badass who's the number two of Anthony Wong, the character.
Yeah.
But like even he has his line he won't cross, right?
Yeah.
Anthony Wong is massacring civilians in the hospital, and he's like, dude, you can't do that. Like, stop, right? Like and then he gets killed by the head guy. So like I like him finally having a moral crisis. Do you know what I mean? Like you would do, it would be like the main bad guy who also hates their own stupid hometown. Like he wants to blow his hometown off the face of the earth or whatever. He's like, you're going to kill everyone?
Well, yeah, you need that moment. His like, he becomes a hero and then he realizes like what the master plan is. And then you often, because one thing that happens with bad guys sometimes is, or the big guy goes against the bad guy sometimes. It's like, or like in, they even have the bad guy, the big guy in a face off. And then he gets zapped, his brain gets zapped. And then he's like, let's get out of here. And all of a sudden, oh no, the big guy's no longer fighting Nicolas Cage. Now he's fighting for Nicolas Cage.
That's right. I forgot about that. Okay. All right, this feels good. How much time we got?
We got about 12 minutes.
So it feels like we're rounding the bases here. It feels like
Let's get to the
act one is his childhood in the Sandlot.
Yeah.
And then Act Two is prison, and he busts out.
Yeah, Act Two is his acceptance into the life of crime. Act Three is his journey of becoming, I mean, he was a bully in high school, or a lunk for a bully in high school. He survived prison as a big guy, and now he's actively becoming a big guy in organized crime.
Well, you would do, he's struggling to make it work, and then the opportunity is to join this criminal organization, the height of which is when he throws Bond off the cliff, and he is the guy now. He is like the number two. He's got the, and again, I always picture like all of the other henchmen being scared of him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And being like, this is the guy we all respect, right? Like he's in charge, right? And like, this is the, this is as close as he's gotten to feeling like a, like loved, right? You know, in this dark way. Okay. That brings us into Act Four.
Is Act Four like if he somehow, when he realizes that the bad guy is doing really bad stuff and he has a line that he can't cross? Like, again, you get his, he get his fine moment to a degree, where it's like he's the big, he's the bad, he's the big guy of like the best crime organization out there, and then he fights back because it crosses the moral line. Is that that thing that lets him survive the criminal organization's downfall and gets thrown into Hollywood, and there he finds a different sort of, again, it's like he becomes the bad.
Hollywood feels like a step backwards from.
No, because what you would do is it is like
the,
isn't
that still being used in some
Well, exactly. It's like what I like is that in the same way that kind of like
here's what can I throw this out there? It feels like Act Four, like if the midpoint of Act Four is you become the number two to the Bond villain, right? Act Four is the Bond movie where essentially Bond comes in and fucks up this entire criminal organization and you lose your friend because it all goes down in flames, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like it feels like the I see where you're going.
Yeah, it's kind of like the wrestler, because it would be like often like the, if this was like an addict movie or whatever, it would be like this is like he found it, like he got out of, he thinks he's not being used anymore because now he's celebrating, he's doing good stuff, he's making movies and things like that, and people like him on the big screen. But then it's like, no, that's not, again, it's still not real love, and then it becomes self-destructive, as opposed to like the journey back to finding his self-realization. You need that moment where you hit rock bottom, which is like your own self-loathing. It'd be like all of a sudden, like now one of his movies doesn't open big, or like, you know, all of a sudden nobody's using big guys in movies anymore, and he starts doing drugs and he's on at his low point, and then he realizes like the problem wasn't everybody else, like yes, everybody uses him, but the problem is like I never truly loved myself or whatever.
Let's
then
figure out what kind of moment we want him to end on,
yeah,
and then work backwards,
yeah,
from there.
Yeah, that seems to be the
yeah, what's his, like,
it to me, it comes, it's got it like with Jenny, right? It has to come back to this relationship with the Blofeld character,
yeah,
to some degree, right? Again, like it also feels like an interesting moment would be like in Act Four would be Blofeld cuts bait on his entire criminal organization, is going to abandon everyone to save his own ass, including his best friend, right? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, so like in Forrest Gump, it is that, to the point, it's like it is, she leaves him, and again, they never really got a real relationship. They never, you know, they had one, I think they have sex, or they,
yes, Matt, because he does have a kid.
Yes, you're right, that's how that works.
Well, she got pregnant from letting him touch her boob.
Yeah.
Oh, is that how it goes? Oh yeah. Hold on, let me just consult,
according
my
to
notes.
13-year-old Matt, that was how that works. That was, he's like, that's the scene where they had sex.
Yes, that's right, they had sex once, and then she leaves him,
yes,
after that.
Yes,
and then he just has a kid.
Oh, so that's probably the midpoint. Like, what's the Blofeld version, yes,
because,
of them having sex?
She is punished for all of her sins.
God.
And Forrest Gump, after all this, gets to do the American dream and just have a good family, and he has a kid to raise, and you're like, oh, he's gonna be a good dad. That's like this, that's like the ending. Like,
yeah.
He's so pure that he's the one who should raise the son, not this damn liberal woman. So yes, what's the version? What's the one good thing that came out of this toxic relationship that Forrest Lump is gonna have a choice to pursue? That's not, that is like where he finds true love. You know, and I guess it could be a kid.
He and the bad guy have a kid.
Like the bad guy just has a kid, and it's like,
part of their criminal organization is a string of chicken restaurants. He's like, I could run these chicken restaurants.
Okay, well, what is the bad guy plot? Like that, you know, like again, that's another, like, oof, again, like, I know I don't want to dive into, like, but I'm trying to think of something that could spring forth from that. Do you know what I mean? You could do like the bad guy steals a whole shitload of gold, right? And then he finds the gold at the end. And it's like, what's he gonna do with the gold? Like, that would be a thing, right? Like, and is he gonna open a, you know, like
a gym so everybody can be big guys?
Yeah, everyone can get big.
Everybody can get big and be like, there's not, anybody can get big. It's just, there's nothing special that I'm big. I'm just big. Everybody can get big, and he's gonna make people work out, and he develops CrossFit, and then a bunch of people get really fucked up because they work their muscles too hard without knowing what they're doing. He starts rock climbing.
Sounds like their problem.
He opens a bunch of, he takes a lot of money to open community centers for kids to get like exercise and
like an anti-bullying
I guess anti-bullying. Because he's a big bully. He can do Scared Straight for Kids, essentially, about bullying.
By the way, how bold of the movie would this be? Instead of the bench, I want to just give you a little dose of vision here, boys. Instead of him sitting on some Alabama park bench waiting for a bus, it opens on his TED Talk. And the flashbacks happen in the middle of his TED
Talk. It's his TED Talk. Or it's he's talking to the other TED Talk performer right before he's going to go on stage for his TED Talk. Here's what I would say. Okay, so I feel like Act 4 is he becomes the Bond villain, and then the Blofeld betrays him at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? Like, yeah. It would be like Bond fucks up their whole plan, and then there's only room in the escape pod for one person, right?
You're too big for this escape pod.
You're too big for the escape pod, and then he shoots him in the back and goes in, right? And then so you would do like, the whole lava base erupts, and he's sinking to the bottom of the ocean. Like, that's his low point, right? Like, this whole chase has been folly, right? And then he washes up onto an island, and maybe that's where he meets whoever he's talking to this whole time. You do the Bond and the girl, like at the end of You Only Live Twice, Bond and the girl have escaped in the life raft, and they're about to bone down on the life raft, and it's going to be like 007, and then Big Guy shows up. They fish Big Guy out of the water.
Is it, because to me at least, it feels like the direction is going is that this needs to end with him killing his friend.
No, I don't think he needs
to hunt down
his
friend.
I mean, I guess he could. I don't know. Really,
and suplex him so hard.
No, I think the friend takes the different moral lessons from a similar life event, and
his friend
is punished. Like, his friend died. Like, can it be like the version of he talks to his friend one last time, but instead of dying of AIDS, the friend, if this, not saying you do this, but the friend would be like, "This is my son. Can you take care of him?" He's like, "Why? What are you gonna do?" He's like, "Don't worry about it." And then he gives him his son, and then he walks away, and all of a sudden, like, the building behind him blows up, and he was like a suicide bomber. It's like, oh yeah, that guy lived a life of crime and died from it, and he's gonna...
Okay, well, let's say, to a point, Jenny is not a Bond villain. She does love Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I think this guy loves Forrest Lump.
Okay, so what is that? Okay, so yes, the whole lava base is exploding. They're running to the escape pods. You know, does he tell him where the gold's buried?
Oh, the criminal version of AIDS is... he gets word that he's getting the death penalty. He's getting executed, and it is like,
and they captured him, and he's getting the
He's gonna go rescue his buddy.
No, he's invited to this. They do even view executions depending on if you're the victim's family, or again, maybe he says like, this is my closest family member. He's my only family.
He's listed as next of kin,
so he has the conversation with him before he gets put to the chair or whatever, or lethal injection or whatever horrible thing.
Guy gives him the thing by bust me out of prison. Bust me out of here.
Or he gives him where the gold's buried or something. That's what I'm saying. It's like right before, and then he watches his friend die. And yeah, I mean, he sees his friend die.
Is this
die.
Act 4 or Act 5?
This is like the end. This is like the very end. And then he gets the gold or whatever. And maybe his friend's like, get the gold and do whatever you want. Like, freaking get the gold. And again, he's essentially giving him the task of like, keep doing criminal stuff.
Here's the gold and the doomsday switch. It'll start Act 2 of this whole thing. It'll start the
with this gold, you can definitely go to Blofeld and you'll get his army on your side. Like, you can become the fucking, you can become what I never was or whatever it is. He goes like, I love you, buddy. And then he dies. And then he's like, no, he's not going to do that. Like, he's seen the end point of this life.
I feel like I want him to save his buddy from the electric chair. I feel like it's like the take this and live a better life, and then it's a tragic ending where then like he only wants like, again, like
life's hard. It's not a tragic ending for Forrest Lump. Like, you need let somebody pay for their life of crime. Otherwise, Forrest, like, then these two fucking asshole criminals who just had tough childhoods, just like a ton of other people have tough childhoods, and some people win Nobel Prizes with their tough childhood. These two assholes gonna go away scot-free with a bunch of gold. Now, fuck that. This bully gets iced. He gets executed. And one of them, who probably should be in prison still, at least learns a lesson and then does something good.
Okay, so Big Guy,
here's my Bitcoin wallet.
You can even do Forrest Lump wants to break him out of prison, but this one guy's final mercy, because he truly loves him, is to stop him, because he knows that Forrest Lump would get in prison if he tries to save him. He tries to break him out. Forrest Lump's just going to continue down his life of crime and end up just like him. Like, he learns his lesson,
too. Yeah, but
too.
Then you're taking the choice away from him. It's more interesting for him to make the choice and not do it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So, yes, I think the choice is he escapes, right?
Yes.
You know, he washes up. He's, you know, sort of this anonymous person now. Mm-hmm. And then you would do that. He goes to the trial of Blofeld, mm-hmm. right? And he would do like, or it's the Hague.
He's trying to be incognito. The Hague, one huge dude.
Yeah,
is that the Hague? And it's just like you pan across all the people, like reporters, and there's one huge dude they've got pan up.
I like that, you know, like Bond is expecting trouble at this thing. Right? Blofeld must have some ace up his sleeve, right?
So then
Bond makes the big guy and then sits down next to him. And like it's them on the bench outside the courthouse is like how he's trying to feel, because he's trying to feel out like what's going on here.
Right? Oh, that's fun. And that's him relating the story.
And then you do that, he's here because he's like, he wants to rescue his friend,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's the, like he's got the laser gun in his pocket, right? And he's like, he's gonna bust him out before this, you know, like he's mm-hmm. gonna get the death penalty or something like that. Or you would do like, there's some moment where he sees him, you know, he saw him for a fleeting moment before the execution and the guy gave him something to be like, help me spring out of jail, right? Yeah. So now essentially the question is he going to bust his buddy out of jail and continue this dark, codependent, shitty relationship, yeah. or is he going to let him go?
Or is he going to be a big guy and do the right thing?
Oh! instead of being a big guy, he decides to be the bigger guy.
The bigger guy.
And he lets him go. Right, and then you see that look on his friend's face as he realizes, like, no, he's chosen to let me die, and it's that poignant mix of, like it's like Ben Affleck in fucking Good Will Hunting, do you know what I mean? Like, his friend is, like, sad that he's going to die, but there's also a little part of him that's happy that, like, you know...
Like, yeah, he's also, like, he finally stood up for himself.
Yes, and
like,
so then you do, like, the Blofeld gets marched into the laser chamber where he's going to be incinerated, and the big guy's got tears in his eyes, and, like, he's going to, you know, like, go be a...
And then you realize that he's been doing this for a TED Talk about his life of crime, and then at the TED Talk he says, I do have all this money, and I'm paying for everybody's college. And everybody goes, woo! And he's, like, that guy, but cooler, because he does it for everybody in America, or whatever.
Then you do some, yeah, there's some, like, whatever the thing was he had to do, he was going to do, he uses it instead to, like, you know, be a good person.
Yeah. It'd be like if, like, he never had a chance to, you know, he always wanted to be like there's something that he couldn't do because the people told him he was too big. Like, all he wanted to do was like tap dancing or ballet or something. So he's
walking out of the courthouse and he sees ballet tap lessons on a pole.
Yeah.
With a little tag, and he rips the tag off.
Yes. Yes. It's like, all right, this guy's just going to go do what he always wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like,
he's going to go love himself. Yeah. Yeah. I love that he was too big to do ballet.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, that's your opening scene, as he went to go audition for ballet and everyone laughed at him. Like, just a big, stupid, clumsy piece of shit, right? And he's like, oh, fuck.
And then he got bullied because he wanted to try ballet, so all the kids were making fun of him.
Yeah, good when it's 2-2.
Then the bully kid, his best friend, is the one who did it or whatever. And then it's like, hey, you're graceful, man. Like, use those.
You got a different kind of grace.
Yeah.
A punishing grace.
I love that he decides to do ballet lessons at the end.
And his ballet. So it's like, instead of this dude on a bench, it'd be Forrest Lump, and it's the big guy in a tutu with a gun in his hand.
Okay, again, male ballet dancers don't wear tutus. I don't know what the fuck
this guy can wear
about.
whatever he wants, Freddy.
Yeah,
Freddy.
They have their own.
Maybe he wants to wear a tutu.
Maybe he wants to wear a fucking tutu.
Yeah, why can't guys look flowing and beautiful when they spin on the stage?
Freddy, it's fucking Pride Month. You shut your goddamn mouth about whether a man can wear a tutu or not. Yeah, okay?
If I'm going to spin on stage, I want beautiful tutus.
I'm just saying not everybody who does ballet has to wear a tutu.
I'm not saying everybody does. I'm saying Forrest Lump does.
Okay. I like the idea that...
He's not Forrest Lump.
I like the idea that his...
He's Guy.
Yeah.
Guy Big.
I like
that. Guy Big. Big Guy. There should be a part in the middle where he hears about that Sex and the City is auditioning for Mr. Big.
Oh, yes.
He's like, I'm perfect.
I'm perfect.
I like the idea also that it's the bench outside the courtroom and it's him kind of relating his life story to Bond a little bit. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Bond is there. Yeah, actually.
That's the bench. Yes. Bond is like, what the fuck is Jaws doing at Blofeld's
Hague war crime trial?
War crime laser execution. Yeah. And then he goes up to him and is like, hey, like, you know, like Bond's trying to be incognito.
He's
trying to be incognito. And he just opens up about his life story and what brought him here. Do you know what I mean? And like, Bond was like ready to fucking nuke him, right? Yeah. And it's like, then Bond's got the gun and it's like about to blow him away. And then he puts the gun away.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, you need to go say goodbye to your friend.
Because he realizes that, yes, it's like Bond was going to kill him if you made the wrong decision, essentially.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a fun movie. I like a fun movie.
Pretty wild movie.
It's a fun movie.
It's a big guy movie.
It's a big guy movie. Starring Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks is going to need to gain like 53 pounds of muscle for this role.
Tom Hanks in his toughest role.
Could you imagine if Tom Hanks...
Tom's 40 years and gained 60 pounds.
Tom Hulks.
Dude, I'll watch a movie where Tom Hanks is like, dude, Tom Hanks built... he trained... Krav Maga, and he got so ripped. Did you see how ripped Tom Hanks got? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hello, listeners of Maximum Fun. I want to tell you about our newest podcast that tells you all about the truth of the flat Earth.
Have you been looking out over the horizon and you've been thinking, wait a minute, this doesn't look round. I've been lied to my whole life.
What is NASA doing with $52 million a day?
Come on. We explode the myths.
Just kidding. We're Oh No, Ross and Carrie, and we investigate extraordinary claims.
That's right. We investigate extraordinary claims firsthand. We go undercover in fringe groups. We get alternative medicine treatments. And we hang out with people who have unusual beliefs, like flat earthers, 9/11 truthers.
We do ghost investigations. We've joined Scientology, and we got baptized in the Mormon church.
If it goes bump in the night, then so do we. Why don't you check out Ono, Ross, and Carrie at MaximumFun.org?
Freddie Wong here with Big Metal Balls, as featured in the hit Hollywood movie Big Guy. Guys, what's our number one weakness? Nut shots, hits to the bits. Those punks clock our cocks and we down for the count. All those store-bought protective cuffs get slammed once with a hockey puck, right in the trash. They don't work. Don't even get me started on firearms, 9mm bullets. Nobody wants their balls shut off. These bad boys, they're bulletproof. Take your soft, squishy human balls out of your sack and slot in my Big Metal Balls instead. These bad boys guaranteed to work against super spies, superheroes, archaeologists, treasure hunters, karate masters. You go into a kung fu tournament, fight to the death, no problem. You're gonna go up against a Muay Thai guy, all them elbows and knees, and nothing. Work on your grappling, though. They're gonna get submitted. Guys, I hear you. You're worried about the bedroom. Stop. You got a Newton's cradle down there. Your partner's gonna clack them back and forth all night long. Spice up your love life with Big Metal Balls. Store brand Big Metal Balls? They're magnetic. You kidding me? That's an accident waiting to happen. Big guy, big magnet, car crusher, conveyor belt thing. You're gonna be stuck up there 50 feet in the air, crotch glued to the dang ceiling while the hero blows up the place. Forget about it. My Big Metal Balls, medical grade stainless steel. Non-magnetic, non-corrosive. You can get through airport metal detectors, no problem. TSA gonna wave their wand all around your ding-a-ling in silence. Don't just take my word for it. My boy Duke Nukem's been bragging about his balls nonstop. Duke, how are your balls?
I've got balls of steel.
Listen to these testimonials.
Hey, yeah, this is Matt for Freddy's metal balls. He cut mine off, my real ones, and gave me metal ones for I don't know why. Glad I already have a kid. Thanks, dude.
Forget about it.
I'm Will Campos. I just woke up with Big Metal Balls. Freddy, why did you do this to me?
Listen to all those satisfied customers. Big Metal Balls sell for $19.95. That's right, $1,995 each, surgery not included. So if you call now within the next 20 minutes, because you know we can't do this all day, we'll throw in the third metal ball. Absolutely free. Your siblings getting lonely down there? No more. You got triplets. 50% more balls. You're going to love them. Here's how to order.
If you'd like a set of Freddy's Big Metal Balls, go to BigMetalBalls.com. And for that third metal ball, don't forget to enter the promo code PodSaveAmerica. One more time. That's BigMetalBalls.com. Promo code PodSaveAmerica.
Hey, Freddie, hey,
that was super good, Freddie. I don't want to make a joke. I just want to say congratulations on such a funny bit.
I feel that Freddie not only cut off my balls and gave me metal balls, he also cut off my writer balls and was a better writer than me because I wrote a whole script out and then Freddie was just typing away and then came up with all of that glorious dialogue. So kudos to you, Freddie.
You gave me stuff. You gave me stuff.
You don't.
Super spy.
Just take the W. Take the win.
Yeah, I'm going to be a salesman, baby. I'm going to sell balls to
people. By the end of that, I was like, I kind of want metal balls. Like, as long as they're Freddy's, I would take them.
Yeah.
All right.
Weird.
Well, that's Big Guy, y'all. We came in this morning and we were like, should we do like a Forrest Gump trailer? And then Matt was like, what if we just do a big Freddy's metal balls ad?
Well, then we watched the Forrest Gump trailer and we're like, no.
The Forrest Gump trailer, by the way, is insane. Go look up the Forrest Gump trailer online. It is the entire... I know people say, like, oh, they spoiled the entire movie. It's 4 minutes long, and they go through the entire film.
Beat by beat.
Beat by beat. They explain it. They even, like, show the scene where Jenny dies, even though they don't explicitly say she dies. Yeah. But, like, how many times do you see... If somebody's talking to somebody in a bed, and they're not in the bed also. Okay, there's two types of bed scenes in movies. If both people are on the bed, they're fucking. If one person's in a chair and the other person's in a bed, that person's dying. So, like, you see Jenny in a bed and he's talking to her.
No,
like,
you forgot dies. About the other type of bed scene, which is when someone wakes up and they roll over and there's not someone else
ooh,
there.
That's a good
and that
scene.
Means that they had sex, but then the person left.
That's true. That's
and also, important scene. Caveat for the person on the chair, person on the bed scene. The person on the bed scene is framed horizontally, whereas the person on the chair, right? Like, if someone can sit up in a bed and talk to you, and that means they're getting better. But that's if they're true. Laid down in bed, their face is horizontal in frame,
they're
they
dead.
Ain't coming
they're,
back,
they're
baby.
A corpse.
That you might as well have them cough into a handkerchief and see a spot of blood.
Roger Ebert always talked about how if someone coughed in Act One, they were dead by the end of the movie. Like, that was his rule. And it, like, it holds up. Like, if you hear someone cough in a movie, they're dead. They've got movie virus.
Because why else would you keep that in the movie?
Yeah, coughs are disgusting.
We're just going to put coughs in movies from now on.
Just a big, sneezy, snotty boys. That's our signature, like Tarantino's feet.
We did have, I have something about people being sick in movies, though, because you never see people, like, that's why I want Jenny sick in VGHS season two. I always liked the idea of people being sick in scenes. There's another thing we were doing where I was like, can't they just be sick in this? And everybody was like, why? And I was like, oh, because people get sick. I just like the idea of people being sick in scenes.
That's like, people get sick, and I like the idea of watching.
I like watching.
Sick. I like taking care of them. My favorite movie from last year was Phantom Thread.
Oh, wait. Well, hold on, Will. We might be onto something here. Well, speaking of getting sick and getting taken care of, what fan art do we have this week?
We got great segue, Freddie.
Thank you.
We got really good fan art from Sam Archangel and from Rob Anderson, who both did some really good posters for Will Campos's Freddie Wong's Galaxy Brain. And then we got the actual, then Rob followed his up with the actual Galaxy Brain meme, where it's like Galaxy Brain and then Freddie Wong's Galaxy Brain and then Will Campos is Freddie Wong.
You know, an episode really hit the zeitgeist and your audience's hearts when all the fan art are about a random bit in the middle of it and not about the actual movie you break.
All right, let's kill this. Let's end it. I'm Will Campos. This week, I'm recommending Shakespeare.
I thought you recommended Shakespeare last time.
You're right. God damn it. I'm such a hack.
No. What's your favorite? Let's do this. Recommend. What's your favorite Shakespeare play, Will?
My favorite Shakespeare play is the Kenneth Branagh adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing, which is fantastic. And since finally everyone thinks Keanu Reeves is cool, I've been thinking Keanu Reeves is cool since fucking Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure came out. I would like to remind everyone that for like 30 goddamn years, everyone thought Keanu Reeves sucked, and I didn't, and fuck all of you for getting on the train now with John Wick. You fucking Johnny come latelys. Anyway, he's in that movie. He's not great in it. He's doing Shakespearean. It's a trip. And he plays Denzel Washington's brother. It's great. It's a good movie. Very fun.
Freddie, what's your favorite Shakespeare play?
It's slight, but I do like The Comedy of Errors.
Okay. Is there one just called The Comedy of Errors?
Yeah, anytime Freddie tries to make a joke, am I right? Boom!
No, it's like his most puntastic farcical of all. It's a short one, too.
Oh.
Did you say it was his most farcical one?
Farcical, yeah, farcical.
He and Shakespeare is the founder of fark.com.
Yeah.
I like the unnamed play mostly, and then watch Ron if you want to. Oh, no, Ron's King Lear.
That's King Lear, yeah.
Throne of Blood is Macbeth.
The Scottish play?
I said it. Oh, no. That's my favorite one, though.
You know you're a drama kid in high school when you get mad when people say Macbeth.
Yeah. I still don't understand. Where did that come from?
Sorry, what?
The Scottish play, when they're like, oh, you can't say Macbeth.
Yeah, I can't say Macbeth.
There's so many. I'm like, there's like, I feel like there's an actor on their way to a play, and we're just saying Macbeth over
Macbeth.
Again. And they're just having
good luck, Macbeth.
It's like an old actor superstition. Oh. The Scottish play.
Wait, why is this...
Because like actors just needed something to feel.
Don't worry, you guys can just keep talking about Macbeth. This will be the jar. This is like the talk that's happening as the music's rising.
As long as we're fading out, I just want to say I thought the idea of Shakespeare founding fark.com was really funny, and I also wanted to contribute my follow up joke, which is that Marlowe is Ebon's world.
Hello. Hello, this is Amy Mann.
And I'm Ted Leo.
And we have a podcast called The Art of Process.
We've been lucky enough over the past year to talk to some of our friends and acquaintances from across the creative spectrum to find out how they actually work.
And so I have to write material that makes sense and makes people laugh. I also have to think about what I'm saying to people.
If I kick your ass, I'll make you famous.
The fight to get LGBTQ representation in the show.
We weirdly don't know as many musicians as you would expect.
I really just became a political speechwriter by accident, realizing that I have accidentally pulled my pants down.
Listen and subscribe at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcast.
It's like if the guinea pig was complicit in helping the scientist.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.